This is Fred Nation on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Fred Fowler and Greg Frank.
Stanley Cup playoffs continue tonight with four games, and the first round has been excellent. And we're going to go out to the Progressive guest line now to talk more about them. Progressive Insurance makes bundling home and auto easy. Learn more at progressive.com. We bring on Greg Wyshynski from ESPN. Greg, thanks a lot for your time. How you doing?
I'm doing good. It's funny. Excellent's an interesting word for the first round, because I think from a competitive standpoint, you could definitely say it's been excellent. The series are all progressing towards, in some cases, a game seven. Yet most of the games have been extraordinarily non-competitive.
That's true.
So it's interesting to kind of define exactly what an excellent postseason looks like.
All right, well, I'll say this. While I had to ask you how to pronounce your last name, you have an excellent first name, okay? And I'd like to thank you. I'd like to thank you for not adding that second G on the end. It's a pet peeve of mine when I see Greg with two G's on the end. Like, where did that come from, right?
Well, they're a different species, really. I look at them with disappointment. They're not like us.
Right.
They are misspelled. Right. If you're spelled correctly.
All right. Let's talk about it as when we look at what we've seen. Let's talk about Sunday first, and we'll kind of go chronologically here. Let's start in Beantown. I'll be honest. I was surprised to see that kind of punch back from the Bruins. Not necessarily saying I thought they'd get swept, but when you look at how Carolina really dominated the regular season, dominated the two games in Raleigh, here we are now. It's a best of three out of nowhere.
Yeah, you know, I kind of figured there'd be a pushback from the Bruins in these two games. I mean, for a couple of reasons. First of all, I was pretty high on the goalie change to Jeremy Swayman. I just think they needed to kind of change something going on back there. I didn't think Ullmark played all that poorly in the first two games, but they could certainly use a bit more competence. But the biggest thing for me, obviously, was them reuniting the top line with Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, and David Pastrnak after they were split up for most of the games in Raleigh. And the key to that was they were able to play them against Sebastian Aho's line from the Hurricanes. So now you've got your top line away from the Carolina Hurricanes' amazing checking line with Jordan Staal. You have them neutralizing the Hurricanes' top line with Sebastian Aho, and that's a recipe for success. You wonder if that can carry over back to Raleigh for Game 5, where the Hurricanes will get the last change and can get that matchup that they want of the Jordan Staal line against Patrice Bergeron. But for these two games, everything really worked in the Bruins' favor tactically and obviously momentum-wise.
Okay, so then as we move on to the next game of the day yesterday, the St. Louis Blues punched back and even things at 2 against the Minnesota Wild. And, Greg, I thought the interesting thing with this series was obviously coming in, it was well documented, the amount of success that St. Louis has had head-to-head against Minnesota. And then they go into the XL Energy Center and win game 1 4-1. And I'm sure a lot of Wild fans were like, here we go again. But then the Wild really punched back in a big way in the middle two games, winning games 2 and 3 going away. And then I think yesterday you kind of saw some of that championship pedigree of St. Louis come back, where you had to think they weren't going to go down without a fight, and now they've made that series a best of three.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, the Wild, if they lose this series, are going to kick themselves for what happened in Game 4. They came out really flat. They conceded the lead to the Blues. Mm-hmm. And then later in the game, they put on the afterburners, and you could feel it was a game where if the Wild were able to tie it up in the third period, they'd probably go on to win that game just by virtue of how well they were playing. But they couldn't get that goal. They couldn't convert some power play chances. They couldn't get one past Binnington, who I thought played really well for the Blues, and breaking a 9-game postseason losing streak for him. And so it gets kicked back to Minnesota. I still like the Wild in the series. I think home ice advantage is going to be a big part of that. But that was one they could have had. They really could have put this series under their thumb, I think, if they had come out better in game four, and certainly if they didn't run out of runway in the third period.
Tampa just keeps doing what Tampa does after it loses the playoff game as they clobbered Toronto last night. And kind of where do you see this series going? Because obviously the later it gets, and I think everybody thought 6 or 7 games with the amount of skill that both of these teams have. But, you know, it's always going to come up. Oh, Toronto can't win a playoff series, and Tampa back-to-back champs. How much of that is in the heads of both of these teams? You know, how much do you think Tampa, while they'll never say it, says, okay, like, let's just stretch this thing out and these guys will choke? And how much does Toronto kind of tighten up as this series goes on?
Well, I mean, you know, I think a lot. Well, first of all, it's unfortunate there's no game 8 for the Lightning. You know, like, they're clearly doing this lose one, win one thing, but they're going to run out of time. I mean, you know, based on the math, when they get to game 7. But, you know, I think the pressure is clearly on Toronto right now. You know, they go back home after getting absolutely blown out in game 4. They can feel good about themselves. They got the split But they go back home with this notion of the Lightning being able to kind of dictate terms in these games when their game is on. We've yet to really see Braden Point take over a game. I think that's a point of concern for the Leafs going into this critical game, because we've seen him rise up in big situations. And frankly, you know, it's a must-win for the Leafs in Game 5. I don't think you could say the same for the Lightning, but I think it's a must-win for the Leafs, because if they go down 3-2 in this series and give Tampa Bay two cracks at this in 6 and 7, I don't think you're going to see the Lightning lose, drop two games in a row in a 6 and 7 situation. So I think it's the series is going to be dictated on whether or not the Leafs win Game 5.
Okay, and then the other game last night in Southern California, the LA Kings even things up with the Edmonton Oilers, and that was one where it felt like, okay, Kings go up there and steal the first game in Alberta, but then it really felt like Edmonton had a firm grasp on that series, and then Jonathan Quick is masterful again between the pipes last night for the Kings. When you look at that series, how much do you still just kind of trust Edmonton's skill and talent level and the way Edmonton was playing coming into the playoffs to just reign supreme, or what kind of real shot do the Kings have to maybe steal this?
I regretted not picking the Kings in the series, to be honest with you. I submitted my picks, and I was looking back on it before the first game, and I'm like, you know, their underlying numbers all season were quite good. They've got some veteran guys that have been through it that are their high-end players. You know, it's funny, when we thought the Kings were going to be good, we thought it was going to be on the strength of young players like Quentin Byfield and others that have been kind of percolating in their minor league system. But it ended up being Kopitar and Deneau and Arvidsson, and until he got hurt, Doughty and Jonathan Quick during the regular season that really carried this team to a playoff spot. Their underlying numbers were strong. Their defensive responsibility is good. And they have surprising depth on that team at the forward position. So I think a lot of people wrote them off because it's like, hey, if you don't have Drew Doughty against McDavid and Dreisaitl, how are you going to win this series? Well, you win the series by having Jonathan Quick turn back the clock to 2014. And play the way he did last night, where he's making saves without a glove. So, you know, do I think they're going to win the series? I'm still bullish on the Oilers winning the series in the long run, but the Kings have certainly made it very, very interesting and have certainly put a lot of doubt in the minds of the Edmonton Oilers.
Before we get to the rest of the series, Greg, we have to talk about the breaking news this morning that Barry Trotz was dismissed on Long Island by Lou Lamoriello and the ownership group there with the Islanders. I was shocked. You look at what he did there, Jack Adams Award in his first year, post-John Tavares, wins a playoff series that year. Then he gets to the conference final in the bubble, Stanley Cup semifinals last year. Okay, runs into the Tampa Bay Lightning. I don't think there's any shame in losing to them, especially last year in a seventh game in a 1-0 game due to a shorthanded goal that Tampa scored. And you look at this year, and you look at the 13-game road trip that the Islanders had to start the season with the arena not being ready, and I remember they kind of bore the brunt of some of the, you know, pre-Omicron postponements where they had to play with like half of a roster, and things were kind of very disjointed for the Islanders, and then a coach that's done what Barry Trotz has done the three seasons prior gets let go. I feel like that's a bad look for the franchise, and why do you think this happened?
Because Lou Lamoriello is the GM. I mean, I'm a Devils fan, man. I grew up with Lou as my GM, and this is the 21st coaching change that Lou Lamoriello has made in his career since coming into the league in 1987. So that's like, what, 35 years and 21 coaches? So that's a lot, you know. He's dealing in volume.
Yeah.
So in asking around here in New York after the news broke in the morning, obviously in a Lou Lamoriello team, there's not a lot of information coming out. But there's a couple of interesting thoughts here. One is that the way that Lamoriello described it as being not a decision solely based on the results this season may tell you that there might be some conflict behind the scenes between him and Barry Trotz insofar as the philosophical way to approach this team. Because it can't be results-based because they made the conference final in consecutive seasons, as you mentioned. The second thing is this, I had someone tell me that maybe it was the lack of growth amongst the young players with the Islanders, and maybe there needed to be somebody coming in with a different voice that could get those younger supporting players to play better, because they're a real key for this team. And in some cases, we saw some regression this season. And then the third thing is, and this is just kind of my theory, you know, the Islanders were great defensively under Barry Trotz for the most part. The lowest they finished was 7th in goals against average, which was this season. But they've never finished higher than 21st in goals per game. And I'm wondering if Lou Lamoriello, even though he's an old-school guy, is looking around this league, looking at the highest-scoring regular season we've had since 1995-96, and is wondering whether or not there needs to be somebody who can get more offense at this team in this era during the cycle of offensive greatness that we're seeing in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I never really looked at it that way, but yeah, you're right. Barry Trotz has always been kind of a defensive, we call it on this show, park the bus type team where you get to the, like your Devils. I mean, it was. I grew up in just outside of Philly, and I couldn't stand playing the Devils in 2000. And, you know, just get, oh, you got down 1-0, and it felt like you were down 5-0. So I understand that, and you know, we saw that a little bit. Another team in the area on the other side of the Hudson River, the Rangers with Henrik Lundqvist in his prime, they were never the best offensive team, and were always able to thrive with defense and goaltending. So speaking of the Rangers, let's just transition a little more to tonight. Now, when we look at the four games tonight, that's the one I'm most intrigued by, New York and Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, obviously, with the goaltending carousel. And when I look at it, I look at Pittsburgh and say, well, that's probably how they have to keep winning, is to they have to score, because you just never know what you're going to get from your goaltender on a nightly basis. I ultimately still think the Rangers win this series, but, you know, Pittsburgh has shown an ability in the two games they've scored 11 goals that they've won, so they can clearly keep scoring, and can they just score their way to a series win? What do you think there?
Well, that's just the thing, right? I think the intrigue tonight is, you know, Igor Shchurkin got pulled in game three. What does he come back with game four? Well, the only other time he was pulled this season, he gave up four goals in his next game, right? So we don't have a lot of history here. That's more of an anecdotal thing, but it's something to keep in mind that just because a guy gets pulled doesn't mean he comes back and shuts out the other team in the game that he's returning to. The other thing, too, is that for all of his greatness, the Penguins have hung four goals on this guy twice in the series already. So I don't think they're necessarily intimidated by Igor Shchurkin coming in and maybe being the X factor in a game four. I picked the Penguins in the series because I thought they had a distinct advantage at 5-on-5. And I think that's what we've seen so far in this series, where there are times in which the Penguins have been able to carry play at even strength against this Rangers team that's done some really good things this year. Power play awesome. A lot of their metrics trended up after the trade deadline, but at 5-on-5, they were still one of the worst teams in the league, and I think that's been their Achilles heel in this series. So we'll see what happens tonight. I mean, it's still Louis Domingue in goal, like you said, for the Penguins, instead of being Tristan Jarry or Casey DeSmith. Mm-hmm. They'll get a little boost with Jason Zucker getting back in the lineup, but it's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out. I mean, obviously the Rangers, I think, have to win this game to survive the series. And then we'll see what Shchurkin brings to the table.
All right, Greg, real quick before we let you go, on the other three, obviously Colorado looks like a heavy favorite. I don't think there's much intrigue there, but clearly Calgary, yet again, we've seen Johnny Gaudreau struggle in the playoffs, and you know, Calgary's down 2-1 to Dallas, and Florida is down 2-1 to Washington. Seems like both of those higher seeds are up against it a little bit here.
Yeah, in Calgary's case, their offense has disappeared. You know, they are shooting, I think, just above 3% in the playoffs, which is insane. Some of that is Jake Ottinger playing extraordinarily well for the Dallas Stars, but a lot of it is just Calgary can't get out of their own way offensively. And then in that Panthers series, my concern right now for a team that I thought was going to win the Cup this year is, you know, it's like the old Capitals teams. They might feel like they're looking at their younger selves because, you know, they're a team that dominated in the regular season offensively. They get into the playoffs. Some of those same tricks aren't necessarily fooling their opponent. And the Caps playing just a rudimentary 1-3-1 defense seems to have short-circuited what the Panthers do well. Now, the big key tonight in that game, power play. The Panthers have they've only once in the regular season gone more than three games not scoring a power play goal. They've had no success on the man advantage. The Caps have had success, and so that could be one thing that'll tell us whether or not the Panthers are in business tonight.
All right, there he is, Greg Wyshynski on the Progressive Guest Line, taking a few minutes out of his busy Monday to join us. Greg, thanks a lot for your time, and for us Flyers and Devils people, bring on the lottery.
Yeah, that's right. Big night tomorrow night for those of us not in the playoffs.
Thanks, Greg. We'll do it again.
Take care.
All right.